It will surprise none of you if I tell you that in this morning's portion of the Torah, Moses prays. But it might surprise you if I tell you that Moses prays for the Egyptians. And he does. And he prays for Egyptians more than once. Vayifrosh kapav, he spreads his arms out to the sky and prays that the plagues will end and the Egyptians will be okay. Moses prays to stop their suffering and to end the situation that creates their suffering. Because Moses doesn't hate the Egyptians. He hates the oppression. And Moses, as a man of God, can't stand to see the suffering of human beings and wants it to end. I begin this way because one of the first things that we should be doing, now that at least for the moment and hopefully forever, the war in Gaza is over, is praying that the sufferings of the Palestinians cease, is remembering the mothers who were bereaved, the children who died, the Palestinian doctor whose entire family was wiped out with one bomb, his wife, his children. In other words, we should pray as Moses prayed, that such suffering should end and never blight the land again. We pray for surcease of sorrow. And by the way, if you know where that phrase comes from, surcease of sorrow, then you get extra points because it's from a very famous American poet whose 200th birthday was just celebrated last week. If you know, you can tell me afterwards. You get a free membership. Not to Sinai Temple, just to the I spotted the reference in the Rabbi Sermon Club, which at this moment has no members, but you can be the first. But that's what we pray for. We pray for the end of suffering, and anybody who wishes more suffering on others, that person doesn't walk in the footsteps of Moses. And now we turn to another prayer. That prayer having been said, and having been said with a full heart, we turn to another prayer. But in order to explain this second prayer, I have to remind you that Jews don't only live today. We live in the stream of time. We are an ancient people, and we hear the echoes of thousands of years speaking to us. And in order to explain this prayer, I brought this small paperback book, which I have in my library, which is a facsimile. It's a reprint of the first known printed Haggadah. Not the first known handwritten Haggadah, but the first printed Haggadah, which is from 1527 in Prague. And if you look, and the picture is very small, but if you look at the depiction of the four sons in this Haggadah from the 16th century, and you look at the Rasha, the wicked son, do you know what he's dressed as? A soldier. Because in the Jewish tradition for thousands of years, a soldier was evil. And Jewish children who went off to the army and became soldiers, sometimes voluntarily, sometimes involuntarily, right? In Russia for years, children were kidnapped, and for 20, 30 years, they were conscripted into the army and returned home strangers to their families and their tradition. Jews who became soldiers, they represented the Rasha, the wicked son. The idea that a Jew could be a soldier and anything other than the wicked son was inconceivable for our tradition for hundreds and even thousands of years. But that's not true anymore. In some ways, the greatest distance that the Jewish people have traveled is from this picture in the Haggadah to the picture that became so famous of the Israeli soldier at the Western Wall wearing tefillin. For a soldier to wear a tallit, for a soldier to be praying, that was something that was inconceivable for much of Jewish history. And that's one of the things that has changed now with the establishment of the modern state of Israel. So everyone knows, everyone here this morning, and everybody who pays attention at all, that there's a great deal of discussion about this being a time of healing. In America, everybody speaks about it being a time of healing. Across the world, where they look to America, people speak about it being a time of healing. In Israel, it's also a time of healing. Because after a war, even a war in which, thank God, Israeli casualties were light, after every war, there are shattered lives, ruined families, wounded soldiers and civilians, fear and hurt. And when you say that casualties are light, let me remind us what it is to be a soldier. This morning, the first Aliyah, a couple of you weren't there. We had a bunch of high school students from Milken who are about to go off to Israel come up to the Torah for an Aliyah. If those students lived in Israel, they'd be getting ready to go off to the army. We sometimes don't remember how young soldiers are. They go to the army before they go to college. You know how young someone is before they go to college? For those of us who are way on the other side of going to college, it strikes us that the defense of the land of Israel is in the hands of children. You know what it is to be an 18-year-old and walk through Gaza? I don't care how old you are, you would be terrified, but imagine what that is at 18 when you know that you haven't even seen the world yet. That all the best parts of your life are supposed to be ahead of you, but they may not be ahead of you if somebody's hiding behind that door. That you're not supposed to react too quickly because you never know. It may be a child who walks out into the doorway, but you are aware that it could be someone trained to kill you. And in the less than fraction of a second, that will define in some ways the rest of your life, because you'll never forget that minute, a child has to decide whether, when they first see the shadow, is it big enough to be a person? Is it a man? Is it a woman? Is it a soldier? Is it a child? Will I be alive in the next minute? It is inconceivable. And so when we talk about the fact that few soldiers, thank God, were killed, that doesn't mean that thousands upon thousands weren't profoundly affected in ways they will never forget. You know, in America, we talk about people who come back from war as having post-traumatic stress syndrome. But in Israel, an entire generation has served. What does it do to an entire generation when they grow up knowing that that is what they will face, and then for the rest of their lives they have memories of what it was to face it? every casualty is also a casualty of the soldier with a conscience. Killing also leaves wounds, as well as being wounded, especially when you're a child and what you want is to grow up and have a family and have peace. I bring all this up, first of all, because I'm sure that you, as I, as everyone, for the sake of the safety of those children, of their commanders who are in their early 20s, all of us were so glad when we saw that there was a ceasefire. But it's never over. And I don't mean the armed conflict, I mean the impact of the conflict. I mean what you feel the day that you come home and you look in your parents' eyes and they look in yours and they know that the child that they sent to war is not the child who came back. And that there will always, always be a piece of that child that remembers things that no human being should see, much less an 18-year-old boy, a 20-year-old woman, a 21-year-old man. So that's why I'm speaking this morning, because you can help. You can't take away the experience. You can't change the reality of the politics of the Middle East. Not right now, but you can help. How do we help? We help by reminding those who defend the land of Israel that we care about them. That we understand, to the extent that it is possible to understand from the confines of Los Angeles, what they endure for themselves and for us. We cannot change reality, but we can make bearing reality a little bit easier. When Miri Nash was here this morning, and Robert Zarnegin contacted me and asked if we would help support friends of the IDF, I said, absolutely. Of course we will. Can we put out flyers and envelopes and ask people to contribute? Of course we can. And these flyers are outside, and so are envelopes asking you for your contribution. The first thing I did was go to the Khorsandis, whose son Oliver was being bar mitzvah today, and say, would you make a contribution to lead the congregation? He said, of course I will, and made a very generous one. Because they know, we know, what we are up against. And we know that the land of Israel is a miracle. And by this, I'm going to use a classical definition of a miracle. When Moses goes to Pharaoh, God says to him, Tnu lachem mofet, create your miracle. That's what Pharaoh's going to say to you, God says. Now, if you translate the Hebrew Tnu lachem mofet, it means make a miracle for yourselves. So Rabbi Elimelech of Lizansk says that's how you can tell if something is a miracle. A trick is when the magician knows what he's doing, but he fools the audience. A miracle is when it surprises even the people who make it. When Moses threw down the staff, he was astonished because it was a miracle, not a trick. Those who created the state of Israel, those who live in the state of Israel, those who support it, they're constantly surprised by what this tiny little place can do. That's how we know it's a miracle. So what I'm asking you for this morning is not a trick, but a miracle. That is, let's surprise ourselves. We created the Sinai Temple Israel Center to partner with worthy and important charities here and in Israel, among other things, because we knew we could make miracles. And so I hope, at the end of this service, as you leave, that you will take a flyer you'll take an envelope and you will remember something that I have said so often. There is a price to be paid for not living in the land of Israel. There is something we owe to those children and their parents and their families for what they endure. And if it's something as desperate as medical help, or something as seemingly trivial as a television in the barracks, whatever it is that we can give them, we owe them. They're the ones who stand on the border. They're the ones we pray for. We see the politicians and the statesmen and the spokesmen on TV. But without the soldier, there's no Israel. We hope one day that will not be true. But as long as it is, not only do we owe them, but it should be our pleasure, our joy, and it is certainly our mitzvah to let them know that we appreciate their courage, their pain, and their faith. So please, at the end of services today, give what you can, knowing that whatever you give, they give more. Shabbat Shalom.